Welcome into episode 2 of Armchair Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. Thank you for joining us 2 weeks in a row on this wonderful podcast that started in 2017, which 2017 will hopefully be a lot better than that dumpster fire we called 2016. So thank you for joining us. Today we're going to be going over some NFL football. Before we get to that, I want to give a quick shout out to Liebecker, who provided us with our intro music. Liebecker, for those of you who don't know, they're a great band from the Great Northwest, and we like to support local talent here, so if you haven't checked them out yet, please do so. You can find their information on our webpage on this post exactly, so please throw their support at them because they're a great band and they deserve it. So we're going to be talking about NFL football today, more importantly NFL playoff football, and even more important to that is NFL championship game football. So we have the conference championships coming up this Sunday afternoon. We'll have Green Bay and Atlanta at noon, and then we'll have New England and Pittsburgh following that game. So we'll be going over breakdowns of those games, so stay tuned for that. We also have a review of the Seattle Seahawks 2016 season. What did it mean? What didn't it mean? Where did they stand? Was it a success? Was it a failure? Was it somewhere in between? And then last but not least, we'll be going over some Oscar movies and what's a good movie to win Best Picture this year? Who are in line for some individual awards? And just some Oscar buzz in general. So if you're a movie buff, stay tuned for that. It's going to be a fun little media mashup at the end of the show. So without further ado, let's get to our co-host of the week, which is Leo Jackson, who was kind enough to co-host last week and even more kind to come back this week. So first of all, sir, I'd like to say thank you and also hello. And Leo, for those of you who may have missed episode 1, is an L.A. guy now, but he was a Seattle guy for years and years, still a Seattle guy in his heart, and so he's kindly decided to join us 2 weeks in a row now, playing guinea pig to whatever this is. So, Leo, let's dive right in. Seattle football. This year ended probably a little more abruptly than some Seattle fans would like, probably all of them. And it didn't end with a Super Bowl ring, which in the Pete Carroll era is actually not the greatest thing. So in terms of success or failure, how do you label this season? I mean, they went 10-5-1. They won their division. They had a lot of good things going for them. They hosted a playoff game, won a playoff game. Full picture, how do you label this season for them?
So even though it ended bittersweetly, I can't say words, I would say that it's a success overall. And the reason I say that is we proved that as critical as Marshawn Lynch was to the Seahawks game plan for the entire time that he was on the roster, we proved that we can outlive his retirement, for lack of a better way of putting it. We didn't just keel over and disappear because suddenly we're missing our star running back. We have other running backs who may not be stars in their own right now, but will be going forward. Unfortunately, we saw a lot of injuries to those running backs. Thomas Rawls, of course, last season ended his season early because of an injury. This year, he missed 7 games with a broken leg. We had CJ Procise, who basically missed the entirety of the last two-thirds of the season, even though he had a really promising first third.
Right.
It was just a really battered up team all around.
Well, then even
Michael Bennett, Tyler Lockett, you have these people who are probably the most disappointing injury of the whole season was Earl Thomas, though.
Well, and even if all those guys are healthy, you still cut Christian Michael, who, I mean, I don't know if that cutting could have come at a worse time when Thomas Rawls wasn't quite healthy yet and definitely not in game speed and game shape yet, and CJ Procise just leaves the season with an injury. I mean, how big of an impact was that?
Well, hindsight is 20/20. When they cut Christian Michael, CJ Procise was still healthy, and Thomas Rawls was on the verge of coming back.
Right.
So it was right at that critical moment, and the very next game they injure Procise, and so it's one of those things where if they had known in advance that they were going to lose Procise, I don't think they would have cut him.
That's a great point.
I don't think that they would have. They probably would have taken a look around for other prospects as well. I think Christian Michael's a great running back. I just think he might not be a great fit for Seattle.
Right.
And so the fact that he's on the Packers is kind of an interesting turn of events.
It is, and we'll be covering that a little bit later because the Packers are still alive, but we're here to talk about Seattle for now.
Yeah.
So on the whole, Seattle's 22 starters, give or take, missed around 30 total games this season. How dramatic of an impact do you think that had on the year?
It's the difference. It's the reason why they're not continuing in the playoffs right now. I mean, you have people who are either filling in or are just not the offensive line alone. You have people that were cut over the off season. People like Russell Okung, J.R. Sweezy, Alvin Bailey. You can't lose that many people and then expect to have a cohesive offensive line. We've been having offensive line issues for years now, and with that much change, to suddenly go into the season and then you're still playing with it. Tom Cable did a great job trying to turn all of these players who were not offensive line players into offensive line players, but there's only so much you can do. And after the preseason was over, there's not really a whole lot of room you have to play around before you have to start figuring out what actually works and sticking with it. And it's that sticking with it that just never really gelled.
Well, and having a guy like George Fant, who was a tight end, or not a tight end, a power forward in college, never played football before, organized anyway, he's your starting left tackle this year. I have to believe that him and all the other guys having another year under their belt of gelling and playing together, and now in the postseason as well, I would assume that they're going to come out next year and be in a much better cohesive unit.
And that's why I think this year overall is a success. It's disappointing whenever you are eliminated from the playoffs, but to be honest, Atlanta just outplayed them. Atlanta outplayed them on almost every level, and it's disappointing for me to have to say that as a Seahawks fan, but I have to give credit where credit's due. Matt Ryan is having a phenomenal season, and he's proved that he has the whatever it is that makes a quarterback run. To be able to make it through through at least part of the postseason, and I'm sure he's hoping all the way.
Right. Well, and speaking of quarterbacks, you know, you guys have a pretty darn good quarterback yourself, but our intern Gene, who's also our producer, has been holding up a sign for the last 30 seconds and barking in my earpiece here. So I guess he's got something to say about Russell Wilson, and he wants to know what you think. So let's put Gene on the mic real quick and see what he has to say.
I don't like Russell Wilson. He doesn't stay in the pocket, which is the best kind of bread. Some people think he is the best mobile QB in the league, but he tends to abandon my favorite kind of bread, so that's the end of that friendship. If you can't chat up a mate about bread, what can you really talk about? And who the bloody hell doesn't like Peters? What an idiot.
Some interesting sentiments there, Gene. I mean, my gosh, this is a football show, but Leo, what can you do with that? I mean, that I guess those are sentences. I don't know if they reflect well on Russell Wilson's career or this season, but any response to Gene?
Gene, I didn't know you were so passionate about bread. Russell Wilson is one of the best quarterbacks in the league, regardless of what Gene might have to say. But, we should probably ask him about his bread preferences, so that just for Gene's sake.
We should ask Russell Wilson about his bread preferences.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think we should have him on the show. I'm not sure Gene's going to make it on this show, but Russell Wilson can come on here anytime he darn well pleases. We'll be happy to have him. And if he wants to talk about his bread choices, which I'm sure are probably, you know, Caesar croutons are his favorite since he's so good at destroying everybody else. And who is a better destructor than Caesar himself? So, I don't know. I kind of think of Russell Wilson as a bread and butter guy, you know, something simple, some nice French sourdough or something. But that's a conversation another time. I don't know why in the world Gene brought that up. That's just ridiculous. But, you know, Russell Wilson, he did have a tough year, you know, 21 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, but he threw for more than 4,000 yards for the second year in a row. He had his full bevy of targets out there. So what was the issue with his up and down year this year? I mean, there were some injuries. There was some lack of cohesion on the offensive line. There was the lack of continuity at running back. You know, you might call it a revolving door at times. Is all of that kind of a jumbled mess that contributed to his season? Were there some other things going on? What are your thoughts there?
I think the injury is really key because they're part of the reason why the Seahawks have had great second half of halves of seasons in the last 4 or 5 years is because they've had that first part of the season to get their steam going. And with Russell Wilson, he was never sidelined with it. He did miss part of one game because of an injury, but he was effectively sidelined for a lot of the season because he couldn't run. He was immobile. And so you just don't have the ability to work up that kind of scheme.
Right.
The other part of it is that because there was just no continuity at all on the offensive line with the exception of a couple of rookies, you don't really have the kind of relationship that you need with your offensive line.
Right.
So it's just a whole bunch of stuff that was a recipe for no good. And the fact that they were able to get 10 wins out of the season, 10 and a half if you count their tie.
Right.
That's pretty damn impressive.
It is, and I think you can count this as a win. It might not have been one of their better seasons under Pete Carroll, but it definitely wasn't a failure. So we'll call this a success. You know, it wasn't Super Bowl or bust. I think we all knew that going in. It would have been really neat to see them get that far, but just getting to the playoffs, winning their division, winning a playoff game brings us on to the next topic of what's in store for the future. I mean, where do they go next year and the year after? How do you build on the success you had when Marshawn Lynch and the Legion of Boom were running things to where they are now, where their defense has kind of been caught up by caught up on by the rest of the league, and their offense is kind of turning over to a Russell Wilson-led unit, and you never know when Darrell Bevell is going to leave, when Chris Richard's going to leave. You don't even really know when Pete Carroll is going to leave. Where do we go from here?
Well, I don't have any doubt in my mind that Pete Carroll's not going to leave anytime soon. He's found a lot of really good success, and he has a great relationship with John Schneider and Paul Allen, so I don't think he's going to head anywhere else anytime soon. That being said, Darrell Bevell and Tom Cable and Chris Richard are all sought after. I think Tom Cable's even being, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he's even being courted for the 49ers head coach job.
He's being courted for it, but the rumor is that Kyle Shanahan's going to get that job. So I'm not sure that, I mean, Tom Cable could definitely be like the offensive coordinator or offensive line coach there, but I'd be surprised if he would jump ship for something less than offensive coordinator or head coach somewhere else.
Yeah, if he's not going to be the head coach of the 49ers, then he's probably going to stick around.
Right.
Chris Richard is probably going to be asked about some other jobs, but as far as the coaching staff, I don't see any problems. There's a lot of people who have an issue with Darrell Bevell, and I can see both sides of it. I see why people have an issue because there's sometimes where you're just like, why did you call that? What are you doing? But I don't know. I think that as long as he can adjust after the first quarter, mm-hmm. rather than waiting until halftime, then he gives the offense enough time to actually do something.
Right.
And that's really what he's got to, in my opinion, what he's got to focus on.
Well, and he's great at adapting, great at focusing on Russell Wilson's strengths, Thomas Rawls' strengths.
Yeah.
I mean, he's great at putting his guys in a good position.
I think he's a little bit underrated by fans.
Right.
Because he does focus on the strengths of the offense. He just, I feel like he waits until halftime to make adjustments sometimes, and that's just not fast enough.
And while Seattle hasn't had a great offense in the time he's been there, they've always been really creative, really good at beating teams with doing some things that maybe you're expecting but still don't know how to stop, which
exactly.
I don't know why you would – I don't think Seattle is ever going to fire him while Pete Carroll's around and Russell Wilson's around because he's built that offense around Russell Wilson. I mean, let's call it like it is. Their offensive line has never been amazing, but they had some really good years in 2013 and 2014. Kind of fell off the wagon last year. Now this year is definitely the worst unit we've seen. So I would say going into the draft and free agency that offensive line has got to be one of their top priorities, if not the top priority. But Pete Carroll has already said that they're not just going to throw money at offensive line, which to me, if you're reading between the lines there, he's saying we're not just going to buy the highest priced players. He's saying we're going to shop and get the best value for our money like we always have. I would assume that's how you see it too.
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right. One of the things that happened up until 2014 is we had Max Unger.
Right.
And when you trade Max Unger for Jimmy Graham, you get a great receiver and a guy who's turning into a pretty decent blocker too.
Right.
But you trade the heart of your offensive line, and ever since then we've had an offensive line that in total gets paid less than single offensive line players get paid elsewhere. And I mean it's great for the budget. It makes it so that you can field, you know, four wide receivers that are all getting paid pretty decently.
Right.
You can field several running backs who are probably, some of them are still on their rookie contracts, but you have money to spend on people like, oh my gosh, the return guy they just got.
Devin Hester.
Devin Hester, thank you.
You're welcome.
Who had a phenomenal game in Atlanta, even though his team lost. He alone, I think, with the exception of one run they got called back, he still returned for a ridiculous number of yards, something like 110 or something like that.
And he's talking about retiring, which, you know, he's up there in years. He's been doing this for more than a decade, which is a long time for a return guy. Especially someone who came into the league as a corner for Chicago, then went to receiver, was also doing returning at the time, then went to Atlanta, then Baltimore, now is in Seattle. And I think what we saw was a seasoned veteran that wanted to give it one last push for the Super Bowl, and he gave it absolutely everything he had. And so you can see how much skill that guy has when he's still got a couple of drops left in the gas tank. But I do wonder at his age how many more years he can do this and how many more years he wants to do this. I mean, the regular season's an awfully long grind. And with Tyler Lockett coming back next year, there may not even be room for him to be there. So I think at this point, it's probably in the best interest of Seattle to spend that money on someone else and let him retire.
That's probably a good point. I think that having him on the roster while Tyler Lockett is there is a really good opportunity for Tyler to learn from Devin Hester.
Absolutely.
Because he spent so many years in the NFL, and he's got more tricks up his sleeve than people even realize, because nobody thought that Devin Hester was actually going to be doing those kinds of runs.
No.
But he can still teach Tyler Lockett a thing or two.
Absolutely. And Devin Hester, you know, there's argument to be made whether or not he's the best return man in the history of the NFL, but he's absolutely in the conversation. So you definitely want someone like that teaching your best guy.
Absolutely. Even if he is getting on in years, and
right.
Who knows, maybe he wants to stick around, and maybe Tyler Lockett can focus more on receiving, or maybe they can trade off.
Right.
Something like that. I don't know.
Well, we're running out of time on this segment, so let's follow it up with a real quick Q&A. Without going in depth on position by position or player by player, is there a certain position or position group? For example, you could say cornerback or secondary if you don't want to pick a cornerback versus a safety or something like that. Mm-hmm. Is there a certain position or position group that you feel the team has to focus on going into the draft or free agency or both?
I think any discussion of that has to start with the offensive line, because they have good players on the offensive line. They don't have a good offensive line, and that's a big distinction. You need to have one guy who can lead the offensive line.
Right.
And I think that's really what they're missing right now. You have a good collection of players. They just need to play like a unit. If there's someone in the draft who I haven't looked at who's up in the draft this year. Or even if they've decided, that's how out of touch I am.
Well, until the combine in April, or sorry, in March, that's not really going to be relevant anyway, because players do a lot of things in the end of the regular season and the playoffs that some jump off the tape, like Deshaun Watson, obviously, and others kind of drop a little bit. But some of the guys that maybe didn't pop on game film or on game day go into the combine and really just skyrocket up the board. So really, you're looking at what position group you want to target, and then you really look at who jumps off the page when they actually get tested against everybody in the same atmosphere.
Yeah, that's a good point. So until we won't know if there's a center who jumps off the page, for example, something like that. But you have to have some kind of leadership in the offensive line.
I agree with that.
I think they're doing fine on wide receiver. They don't need, I think it would be silly of them to draft a wide receiver anywhere in the first six rounds.
Sure. Well, with Doug Baldwin under contract and Paul Richardson still under his rookie deal and Jermaine Kearse now under a new deal, and you have Tyler Lockett who's still under his rookie deal, you know, maybe you draft another one just to have some depth behind Lockett as far as kick returner. But other than that, yeah, I can't imagine them using like a pick in the first four or five rounds, maybe a six or seven or an undrafted free agent. But ahead of that, I don't know why you do it.
Yeah. Same thing with tight end. I think that between Jimmy Graham and Luke Wilson and I feel like there was a third guy. I'm trying to remember.
There is, and I'm blanking on his name. Cole Helfrich, I want to say. I don't know if he's still with the team or not. Helfit, yeah.
Yeah. Cooper Helfit, that's who it is.
Okay.
I knew the name was going to come to me. Between the three of them, I think that we've got enough depth there. Defensively, I feel like we need a little bit more depth in just all around. We have really good starters. We have amazing starters when it comes to the defense.
You really do.
And we have a couple of good second stringers. But you can really start to notice the cracks when you miss a guy like Earl Thomas. As good as his replacement is, who, again, I don't have all of the Stephen Terrell, I think.
Right.
As good as he is, and there's no way you're going to have a replacement for Earl Thomas, but you need to be able to have at least one guy who can hold his own and is not going to make the middle of the field a big giant target.
Let me ask you this, Leo. So let's pretend you're GM John Schneider, okay?
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you, in the last 12 months, we lost our strong safety to a four-game groin injury. We lost our free safety to a six-game broken leg, or broken tibia, however you want to define it. And we lost our star corner, Richard Sherman, to no games, but he apparently played with a MCL injury the entire season, or most of it. And then we also lost our starting left corner, Deshaun Shedd, to I don't even know what the knee or leg injury that it was specifically, but basically a destroyed knee. Who knows how long he'll be out.
Yeah.
I mean, I think at that point, you target offensive line first, and try to bring in some veteran leadership, if nothing else, just for depth behind your starters to coach them up. After that, it seems like you have got to get some premier star ability in your defensive backfield in the depth chart. Yeah. You have to have some guys that, heaven forbid, Richard Sherman goes down with a multiple game injury. Can Deshaun Shedd step in that role? Sure. Can Jeremy Lane take over Deshaun Shedd? Probably not. And Deshaun Shedd is in an expiring contract, and now no one knows when he'll be healthy again, so they may not even re-sign him until he's closer to rehabilitating that knee than he is today.
Yep.
So I think at that point, you got to take some talent at corner in the middle rounds and kind of see what it does. Maybe get some guys that are able to play corner and safety and use them as a nickel back later. I apologize for the reference there. A nickel corner. didn't mean to jinx everything, you know, the entire world like that.
This isn't the CFL.
It's not, and you know, I think the CFL is better than I deserve after a comment like that. So I my apologies. So to sum up, we're gonna call Seattle season a success. There is hope for the future because this is still technically a young core. You've got your coaching staff in order. There's not really an opening for Chris Richard to escape to, even though Gus Bradley and Dan Quinn both kind of jumped ship when they peaked. Now you've got Chris Richard, who's hopefully in a multiple-year role. And you've got your star players coming back next year, and you've got some good talent behind them, and now you're going to try to build some veteran leadership and even more depth behind that and hopefully have a multiple-year title run like you were hoping for.
That would be awesome. That would be fantastic. I think they have the starters to do it. They just need depth and O-line leadership.
I completely agree. So let's move on to a few teams who still have hope this season. Let's start in the NFC, Seattle's side. We have the NFC Championship that's taking place in Atlanta at noon on Sunday. and they will be taking on my Green Bay Packers. What is your thought going into this game of how much of a chance do you give Green Bay to pull off the upset here? And it's a five-point spread. To keep that in mind.
So how much would anyone have given Green Bay a chance to pull it off against the Cowboys?
You gave them a better chance than I did. I didn't think they could do it. I am impressed by your ability to see the future there, and I'm proud that it turned out the way you thought it would.
Well, I just like to say, of all of the calls that I made last week, the one that I blew the hardest was the Seahawks game. So I don't know. That's the one where my heart was the closest and I was hoping for the best. Anyway, you have two teams who are very pass heavy.
Right.
The ball is going to be flying back and forth all day long. Atlanta has a pretty good defense. Green Bay has a pretty good defense. I think that you have two really evenly matched teams. I underestimated the Falcons last week. I'm hesitant to do so 2 weeks in a row. I see a really high scoring game with lots of very long balls.
Right. Well, let me give you some key numbers here. Let me know what you think of these. So,
okay.
In 2016 in the regular season, the Falcons had the most. They scored 33.8 points a game. They allowed 25.4. Green Bay scored 27 points per game, and they allowed 24.2. So both offenses really strong, top five on both counts. I believe Atlanta was number one and Green Bay was number four.
Yep.
But they're both giving up a ton of points on defense. And then on yards allowed on defense, Atlanta's given up 370 yards a game, Green Bay 363. So pretty darn close there. And both of them in the bottom quadrant of the league as far as yards and points allowed. They're both really letting people stay in games with them. So to me, this looks like a shootout all over the place. And you look at their 2016 playoff numbers. Now, granted, Green Bay has played two games and Atlanta's played one. But Atlanta has scored in one game 36 points against your Seahawks, and they gained 410 yards. They only allowed the Seahawks to score 20. They only allowed the Seahawks to gain 309. On the flip side of that, Green Bay, in beating New York and Dallas, scored 36 points a game. So Atlanta and Green Bay have both averaged 36 points a game this year.
For the
playoffs. Green Bay is also averaging over 400 yards a game, but they've allowed 22 points, and they've allowed 397 yards per game. So Atlanta's defense is so far playing a little bit better, and Green Bay is allowing a little bit more of a comeback from teams that they're putting the pressure on. Which to me worries me a little bit, because you have Green Bay, who's potentially down Jordy Nelson already. They're saying it's a long shot for him to play this Sunday. Now, which with fractured ribs, I'm still in shock that he could even be playing. I would even be having trouble getting on a bed if that were me, but that's why I'm not a professional football player and he is. Then you have Devontae Adams, who's their number two, arguably the number one the way he's played this year. And he's out with an ankle injury, not practicing, and may not practice till Saturday, if at all. And if they're down those two guys, I'm not sure what kind of a chance, if any, that they have against Atlanta, who's going to have a full complement of weapons and quarterback Matt Ryan full strength, that offensive line at full strength. You have Julio Jones, who may have a turf toe injury, but he's going to play. You have Mohamed Sanu, who is as capable of number two receiver as any. And you have Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman, who are two of the best running backs in the league as a duo. You know, separate them out as individuals, maybe they're not so spectacular, but as a combination, I don't know how you shut them down. So I guess with all that in mind, you know, who are you betting on to win this game?
So I want to respond to some of your stats first.
Okay.
So 309 yards allowed, 36 points scored, 410 yards scored. Or yards gained. That's all against the Seahawks.
Right.
And like we just said, I overestimated the Seahawks' playing ability this last week.
Right.
It's not that they're a bad team. I want to make sure to be clear to all the people listening. They just did not play at their best. this last week. And so when you have the Seahawks who aren't playing at their best, you're going to have fewer, you're going to have a more nice looking defense when you're playing against them.
Right.
You're going to have better offensive numbers than you would otherwise when you're playing against them.
Sure.
So you end up, you know, yeah, they got 36 points a game and 410 yards scored against the Seahawks. The Packers have the same against the Giants and arguably one of the best teams in the NFL right now, the Cowboys.
Right.
So, on the one hand, yeah, they match up, but not really.
Right.
And speaking of yards allowed, 309, that would be about 85 yards higher if it wasn't for one penalty that pulled back a Devin Hester, return.
That's a really fair point, which also pinned Seattle back inside their own 10 and forced the safety, which allowed two more points, which eventually led to another 3 points.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a very weird combination of factors
right. That
all went to make Atlanta look a lot better going into this game, statistically.
Well, let's talk about weird factors for a minute.
Okay.
So, there's some creepy parallels circulating between the 2016 Green Bay Packers and the 2010 Green Bay Packers. 2010, of course, being the last time they won a Super Bowl.
Yep.
So, in that season, Green Bay held a 10-6 record. They hosted and defeated the team that plays home games in the Super Bowl site, which that year was in Dallas. So they hosted Dallas in Lambeau and beat them in Lambeau. In the regular season, they beat Philadelphia, lost to Chicago, and lost to Atlanta. Then in the playoffs, who do they face? Philadelphia, who they beat. The Falcons, who they beat. And the Bears, who they beat. And in even weirder news is that they had to beat the Falcons, who were the number one seed that year, in Atlanta, just to get to the NFC Championship. So here's where it gets kind of, you know, Twilight Zone. Do 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 do. 2016, they have a 10-6 record. They hosted and beat the team that plays home games in the Super Bowl site, which is Houston. So they played them in Lambeau, beat them in Lambeau. Regular season, they beat New York, lost to the Cowboys, lost to the Falcons. Now here we are in the playoffs. Who do they face first? New York. They beat New York. Who do they face next? The Cowboys. They beat the Cowboys, and now they're playing the Falcons. And the funny thing is that in order to get to the Falcons, in order to play them in a rematch of the regular season, they had to beat Dallas, who was the number one seed, just to get there. Now, none of that actually matters. That's important for people to remember. Now, that's all for entertainment value. None of that will have any bearing on the game whatsoever. But it is fun to talk about because it's very rare that something like that comes up where you have a season that's 6 years apart from a different season, but you have all of those parallels. It's a little bit spooky.
So, your argument in all of this is that if the universe makes any sense, then the Packers are going to win the Super Bowl this year.
They should, and the funny part is that it should be against New England because it wouldn't make sense for them to play Pittsburgh because they played Pittsburgh the last time. So it would make sense for New England to beat Pittsburgh, Green Bay to beat Atlanta, and then Green Bay to go on and beat New England.
So that would be a very freaky coincidence.
It would be, and I don't expect it to happen. It wouldn't surprise me one bit if we see an Atlanta-Pittsburgh Super Bowl. I'm hoping for Green Bay-New England. But that's, you know, that's my personal hope. That's not what I actually expect to happen.
All right.
So some actual facts. The most recent time Atlanta went to the NFC Championship game was 2012 when they lost to San Francisco. And the last time Green Bay went was 2014 when they lost in a game that nobody ever wants to talk about. I mean, it was boring.
What are you talking about? I love talking about that game.
It was boring. Nobody was interested. You didn't even watch the ending. It was such a boring ending.
You tell Jermaine Kearse that it was a boring game.
Well,
it was the most exciting game of his whole freaking career.
I tried to interview Jordy Nelson earlier this week, and he burst into tears talking about Brandon Bostic and that botched onside kick. And
onside kick.
The two-point conversion, the Jim Gaffigan fake punt. I mean, it just goes on and on.
Jim Gaffigan, oh, jeez.
Yeah, apparently he and John Ryan are Irish twins or something to that effect. So they've actually met and taken a picture together, which we all were wondering if the universe would end. It turns out it didn't. So, you know, I guess numbers aside, because Rodgers and Ryan have been on such a torrid pace in the last 8 to 10 games. And the running backs for Atlanta and Ty Montgomery and Christian Michael, you know, you could call that a favor or something in Atlanta's favor. To me, it's kind of a wash. You take Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu, and you take Devontae Adams and Jordy Nelson. If they're all at full strength, to me, Green Bay's got the advantage on the offensive side. And maybe Atlanta's got a little bit of an advantage on the defensive side, but I have to admit that, you know, looking at this game on paper, if the stars align and everyone's healthy, I think Green Bay wins this game easily. But unfortunately, not everybody's healthy, and there's more injury concerns on Green Bay's side than Atlanta's. So if you take two amazing offenses and two average defenses, and one of those offenses has a hurt star receiver and another hurt star receiver, to me, that takes the quarterback's ability down a peg, and now Green Bay probably loses by a touchdown.
I think it's going to be closer than that. I think that you're going to have something pretty close to, well, okay, not what we saw in Dallas, because that was just ridiculous.
Right.
The tie game, and then another tie immediately after that.
Right.
Decided by people kicking balls.
Almost overtime, but not quite. 2 50-yard field goals, 3 actually in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah, if you ignore the Cowboy last second timeout, then yeah, basically was 3 just by Green Bay.
Right.
But I don't know. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be a very high scoring game. I'd be surprised if both teams scored less than 4 touchdowns.
Well, I guess before we take your final prediction on that game, move on to the AFC Championship. Let's, you know, Gene's been back from his bathroom break. Let's see if he's got an input on this. Gene, what do you think is going to happen in the NFC?
In the NFC, Atlanta is going to beat Green Bay. To be truthful, I'm hoping to see Aaron Rodgers fail miserably. That man has a face like a Bayshed hound. And as a child, my prized G.I. Joe action figures were eaten and destroyed by a rotten Bayshed hound named Fenton. I can still hear the screaming.
Well, I was hoping that Gene might have something better to say after that ridiculous bread comment, but apparently his football insight does not revolve around football. So, okay, Gene, you want to see Aaron Rodgers fail? I get it, I guess, but Leo, do you have...
That's horrifying, though.
It is.
He has PTSD from his childhood. Of course he wants to see Aaron Rodgers fail if he has that kind of PTSD.
He was telling me a little bit about some other PTSD he has that we'll get to in the next round. You know, being British, there's some interesting feedback he has on American culture, so it kind of makes me wonder why he came here in the first place. It turns out that Gene actually applied for a sportscasting internship in the UK and was looking for a radio show covering football in the Northwest, and somehow he ended up here. So I have to believe that he was hoping to cover football, not football, and in the Northwest of England, not America, but somehow...
Like association football in, like, Wales?
I guess so, you know. We'll have to take him out for a pint after the show and see what he has to say, but, you know, so far it's been hard to get anything out of him that makes any sense, so I don't know if they were trying to get rid of him or what happened. But here he is, and, you know, he puts some information out there, and we'll see what we can do with it, I guess. But so I'm picking Atlanta in a one-score game. Gene is apparently picking against Aaron Rodgers and for the Bayshed Hound, or I don't know. What are you picking, Leo? What's your take on this game?
I'm gonna go for the underdog. I'm gonna go Green Bay. I think it's gonna be a very, very tight score. I think you might even end up with a field goal deciding the whole game again. I don't know for sure, but that's what I'm gonna go with.
All right, fair enough. Well, let's keep moving right along. We've got a lot of ground to cover and run out of show minutes available. So the NFC Championship we've covered. We've covered Seattle. We're moving on to the AFC Championship. So we've got New England hosting Pittsburgh Sunday afternoon at either 3:40 p.m. on CBS, or it's going to be whenever the Green Bay-Atlanta game is over plus a half hour. So keep that in mind as you're scheduling your Sunday. So, Leo, New England is 7-2 at home this year, including the playoffs. Pittsburgh is 6-3 on the road, including the playoffs. New England's won a home playoff game. Pittsburgh won a road playoff game. How do you score this one?
That's a good question. Last week, I was having some trepidation about the Kansas City game because I didn't want to bet against the big three. You have Ben Roethlisberger, you have Antonio Brown, and you have Le'Veon Bell.
Right.
And if you're going to bet against the big three, the only team that really makes any sense is the Patriots.
Right.
But even that, I'm a little bit hesitant. You have Tom Brady, and you have his full complement of weapons. I haven't looked at the injury report for the Patriots. Do you know who's out for this game?
I don't know of anyone that's out, to be honest. I've heard that, you know, certain guys might be a little banged up, but at this point in the season, who isn't? So I don't know that there's anybody actually out.
If he's got his full complement of weapons...
Actually, that's not true. Rob Gronkowski, not going to play.
That's true.
Other than that, he's got his full complement of weapons. Chris Hogan is playing or practicing. I mean, Malcolm Mitchell is practicing. Julian Edelman is practicing. I haven't heard anything about Danny Amendola. He might be out. But he does have LeGarrette Blount. He does have James White. And he does have Deion Lewis. And just those seven or eight players, I mean, my goodness, how do you stop all that?
Yeah.
And I didn't even mention Martellus Bennett, who is Gronkowski's brother in arms and fill in starter at tight end. So there you go.
Yeah, evil twin.
Right. So now you have 10 skill position players plus Tom Brady. What do you do?
Big three loses against Big 12.
Probably.
When you have that many different weapons to use, it's just going to be an onslaught. I mean, the Steelers are going to hold up their end of the bargain. I don't think it's going to be I don't think they're going to get decimated. But I think you have a hard time beating the Patriots at home, even if you do have a 6-3 record on the road.
Well, and, coming back to that spooky Twilight Zone Green Bay 2016-2010 tangent for just one brief second, the team that Green Bay faced the Super Bowl that year was Pittsburgh, which is, coincidentally, the last time Pittsburgh was in the AFC Championship game, 2010. But here's something from this year that might help you out. New England beat Pittsburgh 27-16 in Pittsburgh. The big question mark in that game is that New England had Rob Gronkowski, who they don't have today, and Pittsburgh was starting Landry Jones, who obviously has not been Roethlisberger. So is it fair to say that Roethlisberger covers the spread in that point or in that game of 11 points, or is this one going to be even worse? Where do you stand?
It's not going to be worse. There's no way they're going to lose by 14 points. They're just not going to let that happen. They have too many offensive weapons. Both teams do to be able to have that far of a point spread. I think with Gronkowski out, Martellus Bennett is a great tight end, and he's filling in very well for Gronkowski.
Right.
But he's not Gronkowski.
He's not.
And there's no two ways about that. They're probably going to score one touchdown less because Gronkowski's not in the game. And that's probably the reason why it's going to be as close of a game as it is. But I'm still going to go for the Patriots.
Well, and someone that New England didn't have in the last matchup was also Deion Lewis, who scored a rushing touchdown, a receiving touchdown, and a return touchdown in their playoff game. I'm just going to go on a limb and call that ridiculous. Hopefully the rest of the world doesn't shun me for saying something like that. I don't think that'll happen again, but my goodness, that's insane. And having that ability on the field on all three phases of the game, I don't know that Pittsburgh can defend that. Then you've got Brady, who even though he looked human last week, still completed darn near 50% of his passes against the best pass defense in the league. He almost threw for 300 yards, and he threw two touchdowns against two interceptions. Now, do those two picks happen every week? Absolutely not. He's Tom Brady for a reason. But can Pittsburgh get in his head a little bit? Probably. They were certainly able to handle Kansas City last week. They held them to 16 points. I don't think they'll hold Tom Brady to 16 points, but they can maybe hold him to 24.
They held them to 16 points, but only scored 18 points against them. So that's right. One thing to keep in mind. And Kansas City has a good defense, but I don't think that they have a New England defense.
They have a better pass defense, but their run defense just hasn't been the same. And after they lost Justin Houston, they were even worse. So New England has the number two scoring defense in the league. And, you know, they're number two against the pass and number seven against the rush. Now, they were facing Brock Osweiler last week. Now, these are postseason rankings. There's no point in talking about the regular season with how much changeover both these teams have had. So, in one playoff game each, New England scored 34, Pittsburgh scored 24. Or, sorry, they scored 18. New England racked up 357 yards, and Pittsburgh had 378. On defense, New England only allowed 14 points. Pittsburgh allowed 16. New England only allowed 285 yards, and Pittsburgh allowed 266. So you're almost splitting hairs here. I mean, this seems like it's going to be a really close game decided by a field goal in my eyes.
That's entirely possible. And, if it's decided by Gostkowski, that's New England's kicker, right?
That is.
Okay. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's the deciding factor, just him kicking a field goal. That being said, I think it's going to be a little bit more of a spread than that. I don't think it's going to be quite as close, simply because you have New England fans screaming in your face.
Right.
I mean, New England is not known. It's not known as the loudest stadium in the world, but New England's fans are very loud. They're a force to be reckoned with, and you can't deny home field advantage when you're talking about any kind of a game like this.
Well, especially since, you know, New England's been to six straight AFC Championship games, six.
Yeah.
Which, as much as we talk about LeBron James and the NBA going to six straight NBA championship or NBA finals, this is nuts. In football, the amount of competition you have and it being the ultimate team sport and just how hard it is to win in this league and then get to the postseason and then actually win a round or two, just getting that far is crazy. Now you've gotten to the pinnacle of the sport 6 years in a row. Winning half of them. As much as I respect Pittsburgh, they've got to be intimidated by that stat. I know they've seen it.
The Steelers have the most, correct me if I'm wrong, but they have the most Super Bowl wins, though.
They do. Most of them came in the last 50 years. There's been nothing since 2008.
True.
So it's been quite a while. Ben Roethlisberger has been to the Super Bowl three times in his career. You can count one of those as his victory. One of them I'm going to go ahead and give to a mixture of the rest of the Steelers and the officials. And the other one I'm going to give to him. The third one he lost straight up to Aaron Rodgers. So then you have Tom Brady, who has played in more Super Bowls than any one quarterback ever. And he's won just as many as anyone. You look at Montana, you look at Bradshaw, they both won four. They may have gone 4-for-4, but they didn't play in six Super Bowls. Brady has played in six, and he's been in all of them. You know, he very easily could have won the two he lost to Eli Manning. So, I mean, there's a chance that guy's 6-0. If Denver doesn't get in his way in 2013 and 2015, he might even be a ridiculous 8-0. He could be the Jordan of the NFL.
All right, I'm not going to entertain the thought that they're going to win the 2013 Super Bowl.
Probably not.
Just for respect for our Northwest sports fans.
Sure.
But no, there's no denying that Tom Brady's a force to be reckoned with, and nothing would bring me more joy than to see whoever the winner of this game is lose to whoever the winner of the NFC game is.
That's fair.
Because in either case, you're either winning against the Patriots, who are the in my opinion, some of the smuggest football players in the freaking world.
Right.
or you're playing against the Steelers and winning against the Steelers, who, let's just say 2005 was not a good year for Seahawks fans when it comes to Steelers. So
you waited 25 years to get there, and that's what they gave you.
Yeah, exactly. And all I got was this lousy T-shirt that has a Steelers logo on it.
Not good. Not good. Well, before you and I make our official picks in this one, let's let Gene chime in again and see what he has to say this time. Gene, I'm hoping, pal, that you have something football related to say to this football question. I don't have an ounce of hope that that's going to be true, but let's just cross our fingers and see what Gene has to say.
In the AFC, I am picking the Steelers to beat the Patriots.
Finally!
I just read about this terrible work of fiction called the Revolutionary War.
Here we go.
And it has bothered me tremendously.
Yep.
Which means a team called the Patriots cannot be allowed to win.
Why do we ask
the Empire Gene? Losing a war? Ha ha ha. No, no, it would not happen.
Gene, I don't know why we ask you questions. I'm going to give you one more shot to make a real football-related comment, and then we might have to move on to other topics so that you might have something to say. But let's give him one more shot. Gene, please, I'm begging you. One more. Why is New England going to win? Or sorry, why is Pittsburgh going to win?
Not to mention that the Patriots coach looks like that Emperor Palpatine character from those Star Wars films. And what did he ever amount to? They won't win. It just won't happen.
Gene, I applaud you trying to bring up Star Wars in this conversation, but I don't see how it impacts this game at all. This
he does have a point. He does look a lot like Emperor Palpatine.
That's accurate. I don't know what he was getting at there. I'm not sure anyone will ever know, but apparently so Gene thinks the Steelers are going to win, but he can't tell us why. It's probably the easiest way to describe it.
Sure.
We'll just move on to our picks, and I'm going to take New England by a field goal.
And just so I can be a little different, I'm going to say New England somehow by 4 points. I don't know how it's going to happen, but they're going to win by 4.
I'm excited to see it. I think it might. I don't know why, but it might.
Let's say it's a 2-point conversion on somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. So let's move on to we've got our NFC prediction where I'm taking Atlanta and you're taking Green Bay. We've got our AFC prediction where I'm taking Pittsburgh and you're taking New England. Just
you're
to read.
Pittsburgh?
I'm taking Pittsburgh, yeah. Oh, no, sorry. I'm taking New England by a field goal.
There we go.
You're taking Pittsburgh. Thank you for the correction.
Nope. I was saying the Patriots.
Patriots by 4. That's right. Sorry, I'm all over the place. All over the place.
Okay.
So at this point, what we have is a few minutes left in the show to go over our media mashup. So one thing that we love about sports, especially in the playoffs, Leo, is drama, and it's something that's impossible to write. Because everything is played out live, so everything is happening as it's happening, to sound a little boring there. But there are great works of fiction that are being awarded prizes at the same time, and those are in the motion picture category of the world. So one thing I wanted to ask you is, while we're going through all this drama on the field on Sundays, we're smack dab in the middle of the award season. We've already seen the Golden Globes. We still have the Screen Actors Guild and the BAFTAs to come. We still have the Academy Awards. The Academy Awards is kind of the Super Bowl of it all. You kind of have the postseason leading up to it, and that's the one that everyone really wants, the Oscar. What are your thoughts on the potential Best Picture winners? Who are you hoping to see in those categories once they're announced? Which is your favorite? Even if it's not announced, where do you stand there?
Ooh, that's a good one. Well, I have to admit, I've seen a surprisingly small number of movies. I usually make a point of trying to see a more Oscar contender type movies before I get to this point of the year. But just based off of how many people have praised it, it looks like La La Land is a pretty high contender. They kind of cleaned up at the Golden Globes.
They did. They won 7, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, that's the most that a single movie has ever won at the Golden Globes. And I'm really excited to see it. Unfortunately, I haven't actually seen it, so I can't really speak to it very much.
Well, And I've seen it myself, and it's phenomenal. Anyone that hasn't seen it, I think, needs to get out there and see it, because it's one of the best put together pictures I've seen in a long, long time.
Nice. One that I have seen that is in the discussion is Arrival, and that is a fantastic movie. It was completely different from what I was expecting. In the trailers, you see a big spaceship, you see Amy Adams looking somewhat terrified and somewhat pensive about what's happening.
Right.
But it is just mind-blowing how crazy it gets. I don't want to give anything away. It's that good.
Gotcha.
You just have to see it. It literally changes the way you look at the world.
Gotcha. If for some reason that one wasn't nominated, how disappointed would you be?
I would be pretty disappointed, honestly, if it didn't get nominated for at least Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Actress for Amy Adams, Best Supporting Actor for Jeremy Renner. If it gets a Best Picture nomination, I think it will, because of how many films they're nominating for Best Picture nowadays, I think it will.
Right.
I don't think it's going to win, just because it hasn't really been very prominent in the awards ceremony circuit.
Right.
Thus far. But I'd be pretty disappointed if it didn't get at least a nomination.
Well, and so far, I mean, from what I can tell, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, you live there, you see and smell what's going on down there. Manchester by the Sea, Moonlight, Jackie, La La Land. Those are the movies that are really getting the biggest buzz with the Best Picture nomination. I mean, again, these are unofficial for now. These are just what we think we might see.
There's two more that I would throw in there. Hacksaw Ridge.
Great addition.
And Fences.
Yep.
Fences, I think, if it's going to win anything, it's probably going to win an actor award. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm kind of lacking on my actual watching of these movies. But being in L.A., you're surrounded by all of the advertisements and for your consideration stuff. And so we end up seeing a lot of that kind of attention for these movies.
Well, and one that I haven't seen pop up on the radar yet is, you know, pun intended, Hidden Figures, which is getting rave reviews by critics, yeah. But I'm not sure. Maybe it's just not Best Picture material, even though it's a great story. It covers the lives of some outstanding Americans and some that, you know, I feel should have had their story told way, way long ago. I mean, this is something that is kind of a social injustice to me. Not kind of, it is. You have three African-American women who are working for NASA as their prized mathematicians that are doing all the projections and plotting. And you have John Glenn, who trusts them better than any computers. In fact, those were their computers back then, were these three women. Are you surprised this isn't getting more Oscar buzz?
I'm surprised it's not getting more Oscar buzz outside of L.A. It's getting tons of it down here.
Okay.
There's billboards all over the place for it, for your consideration type things. I live right near Ventura Boulevard, and that whole street is lined with billboards, and many of them are for specifically for Hidden Figures, and for there's one for Moonlight that I've seen a couple of times.
I've heard that's really good, too.
Yeah, I've heard really great things about that. I'm kind of surprised that it's not getting more press outside of LA. I'm a little bit disappointed because it looks fantastic. Let's see that. And then there was another one I was going to bring up. I know Jackie's getting tons of press.
That's another one I need to see. I'm very interested in how they portray the Kennedy family after the assassination. And I've heard that Natalie Portman's portrayal of Jackie was phenomenal, and that the whole cast is just really good, and the story and all of the production quality is well done. So I'm really excited to see it. I also want to see La La Land a second time to make sure it was as good as I thought it was the first time. I need to see Moonlight. I need to see Hidden Figures. I mean, I'm all over the place in what I've seen this year. I haven't seen nearly enough Oscar contenders to be in an Oscar conversation, but that's what kind of makes it interesting, is that, you know, there's just as much guesswork when you've seen them all as when you haven't.
Yeah, there's a few others. Florence Foster Jenkins is in the discussion. Yeah. Let's see, Sully came out like early in the year. That one's in the discussion. My pick for the outside shot is Captain Fantastic.
Okay.
That movie was that's one of the few I was able to see. It's a really fairly low budget movie starring Viggo Mortensen.
Right.
And my wife Kelsey and I were able to attend a Q&A session with the director.
Oh wow.
And it's a great film. It's a great movie. If you have a chance to see it, I would definitely recommend it. It's about a man who raises his children in basically in the forest, like out as just like living off of out of nature, and he teaches them to hunt and fish and survive, and teaches them martial arts and like how to live off the land, and then he finds out that his ex-wife, his children's mother, has passed away.
Right.
He has to deal with that, and they have to go to rejoin society temporarily so that they can deal with that. And figure out how to handle it. It's a really well made film and has some amazing performances. And yeah, if there's an outside shot for it, then I would be really excited to see it in contention for Best Picture. I don't think it's going to happen just because it's a smaller movie.
Right.
But I would be disappointed if at least one acting Oscar didn't have a nomination somewhere for one of the performers in it.
Right. So let me ask you this. So we've covered that you think that La La Land's the favorite, right?
Yep.
And you're hoping for Captain Fantastic as the dark horse to win it all, or at least get nominated.
If it gets a nomination, I will be ecstatic.
Okay. So what movie would you be most disappointed to see win Best Picture?
Oh, geez. That's a long list.
Me personally, I'm going with a classic called The Disappointments Room, which I think is what they would call the green room at the Oscars if that's what wins. It was the only movie in 2016 to be a major release and to score a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Good times.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, it's disappointing.
yet another movie that I have not seen. Do you sense a running theme? The movies I'm bringing up.
Sure.
Suicide Squad. Right. I heard was just dreadful.
That's what I heard too.
I still hold out hope that it's not as dreadful as everyone says it is, and that because I do plan on watching it eventually. But yeah, I think there'd be some people who are a little disappointed if that one ended up winning Best Picture.
I'd have to look it up. My wife and I were watching a movie a couple weeks ago, and I remember it had rave reviews, and I can't remember what it was, but we were watching it and thinking, what did they love about this? Which, for us, we can usually pick out something that, you know, the acting, the writing, the direction, the production quality, is usually at least something to hang your hat on. This one, we kept racking our brains, trying to really find that silver lining, be friendly to them, and see what everyone else was seeing that we were missing by a wide margin. I'll have to find out what it was later and reach out to you with it. But there's a couple I saw this year that I just wasn't sure what the critics saw. And vice versa, there's been some that I saw, like The Lobster, that was a really intriguing concept, and critics loved it, but it just didn't get very much attention from the average moviegoer. And so that's one that I would be kind of interested to see if it kind of sneaks in as a dark horse and takes some Best Picture spotlight from some other movies.
Yeah, I heard some really good things about that. I yet another movie I have yet to see. It's tough to make a living in LA, so we end up not going to the theater as much as we would like. So
no one ever says about New York and LA is that it's you can go there, anyone can do it, it's easy. You'll be a star in no time. You won't know what to do with all the money.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's get rich quick all over the place. Everyone I know has $1 million.
Right. Yeah. Before we get into the individual categories, where I'd love to know who your most valuable player is in the acting community, if you can see what I did there. let's let Gene chime in again. You know, we owe him X amount of talking time on the air to cover his internship. So even though up till now we haven't really gotten the best info out of him, let's see what he has to say on a non-sports related topic. You know, he comes from a really good background, a good pedigree. His parents are wonderful, wonderful people. I had tea with them when they came here to visit him a couple weeks ago. Let's see if he has some insight on the arts. Let's see. So, Gene, what we'd like to do is for you to tell us who you think should win a best individual honor. That could be an actor, an actress, a director, a writer, anything you want. We just want to know what you think. Who should win an individual honor?
K2SO of Rogue One fame is the most remarkable actor in the history of film.
Really, Gene?
To give K2SO the award for each individual category, regardless of gender, since K2SO does not have one.
Okay.
If I hear Alan Tudyk bloody take credit for K2SO,
he's a great actor.
Performance just one more time, he'll be enraged to the point of composing a very strong worded letter to the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts, and Sciences. I may even look up how to send it to them.
I'm going to send you back
to
England.
That's how angry he'll be.
Okay. So, Gene, why do you think...
K2SO is a character.
I think Gene might can be confused. So, Gene, just humor us. Why would K2SO win anything? Tell us that much, at least.
In order to ensure K2SO victory, I pay to see Rogue One 100 times since it premiered rather than support other films. No one has sacrificed more than I have.
You're definitely going to be sacrificed. Okay, so, Gene, thanks for being here. I don't know what you bring to this program, but whatever it is, thank you. So I guess, Leo, on that note, Gene wants a fictional robot to win Best Actor, Actress, Supporting Actor, Supporting Actress.
A fictional robot played by Alan Tudyk, no less.
Right. So that's Gene's take.
He wants the character.
Right.
That Alan Tudyk voices.
He wants the prop to win, essentially. I mean, it's a tin can, really. I mean, if we're being honest.
If that's the case, VFX should win.
You know, maybe they should, you know? So, as someone who's seen production quality up close and acting and writing and directing, who are you really pulling for to win this year?
Okay, let's see. I don't know if Denzel Washington has enough honors yet. He directed Fences. He stars in it. I think that it would be really awesome to have him one in particular, or to have, I'm trying to remember the guy's name now, the star of Moonlight. He plays one of my favorite characters on House of Cards.
Right.
I haven't seen the movie, so I don't even know if it's, you know, that amazing of a performance, but Mahershala Ali, that's the guy's name.
Okay.
I think he would be a great Best Supporting Actor.
Right.
Like, honestly, I just want the Oscars to not be another Oscars so white.
Right, I agree.
It's getting a little ridiculous.
Well, let's hope that Public Figures is a public figure. How about that?
Exactly. Between Public Figures and Fences and Moonlight, I think that you have three movies that are fantastic that people need to have more more exposure so that people actually will go see them and enjoy them and then realize that Hollywood doesn't have to be racist in order to be great.
Sure.
So, I don't know. That's my little political soapbox. But.
So, I would love to see Public Figures win something. I don't even, you know, best picture, best direction, best writing, best original screenplay, best actress for Taraji P. Henson, you know, something like that would be outstanding. And then Fences, I'm blanking on the lady's name, but wonderful lead actress. Exactly. That's who I would like to win best actress if it can't be Taraji P. Henson. And then my vote for best director is actually going to be Damien Chazelle, who I believe won last year for Whiplash. And he just did a phenomenal job for La La Land. I mean, it was a wonderful film. I'm not the biggest fan of musicals in the world. I do enjoy them from time to time, but I can't just watch any of them. It has to be the right one. And this is a movie he made for people like me, where he actually pitched it to the studio as he wanted to make a musical for people that don't think they like musicals. So he actually made it a little bit choppy and a little bit more realistic. Like, if Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone are dancing in the park, it doesn't look like a scene that's been rehearsed a thousand times. It looks like what would happen if Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling decided to jump into, burst into song and start dancing a little tap dance. What would that look like? And it's just, it's phenomenal. And, you know, there's some other directors out there deserve the recognition. And if he doesn't win, the other guy I want to win on the film is not actually Ryan Gosling, but who I'd like to see is Justin Hurwitz, who was the composer on the film. And the score for this movie is just out of this world. It's great. The songwriting, the composition, the timing of everything. I mean, they just did such a tremendous job on this. I would, you know, I don't need to see this movie win every award, but if it doesn't win at least best director or best composer or both, I'm going to be very disappointed. I'd actually rather that it won those two over best picture, if you can believe that.
Okay, cool.
So, that's where I stand. I would definitely like to see some more diversity. I don't want to see the whiteout in Hollywood. That doesn't help anybody. I mean, we are a country of diverse backgrounds and diverse needs and diverse lives and looks, appearances, beliefs, thoughts, statements, talents. I mean, everything you can think of, we're diverse. So the place that I would hope we would be the most diverse is, of course, the arts. Because what's more diverse than an artist circle? So please, Hollywood, don't do the whiteout again. That should never have happened. It can never happen again.
And the reason why it's striking right now is that we started having more people of color, a few more, not enough, but more than we had.
Right. So we'll just, I guess we'll both hope and cross our fingers that we get a few more people in the minority section of America getting a little bit more recognition, and not just recognition, but opportunity, so they can get that recognition.
Absolutely.
So we'll end the show with that. And, you know, we love sports, and luckily sports is already diverse as it gets. You know, there's people of every background and walk of life and upbringing, athletic ability, personality, ethics. I mean, you pick any, you know, just everything. It's here. It's diverse. So one day, hopefully the art section of the world will catch up. Well, Leo, first of all, thank you for being on the show. It's an honor to have you at all, let alone 2 weeks in a row. So thank you. Anytime you want to come on, we'll be happy to have you. Thank you most of all for putting up with Gene. We know he's a handful. You know, I guess we thought having a British sportscaster would be an honor and would help us class up the joint. But in turn, it's actually made us a little less reputable. So Gene, you're of course welcome to stay here and serve out your intern sentence. I mean, requirement. And hopefully in the next couple weeks, we'll have a Super Bowl preview to share. And maybe Gene will have some insight there that'll actually help the sports world and not hurt it. So with that, we'll sign off. And Leo, thanks again. And Gene, I'll even say thank you to you. You know, even though your points didn't always add up, they were valid on some level, and that's something. So thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time on Armchair Sports.